It's time for Batter Up, the definitive Atlanta Braves podcast with hosts Joe Patrick and Caleb Johnson, giving you exclusive insight into our Braves from Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Here's Joe and Caleb.
Welcome in to Batter Up, the week of June 22nd. Coming to you, Caleb Johnson, here with my co-host, Joe Patrick. Joe, how you doing today?
I'm good, man. It feels like June 22nd has really snuck up on us here. I think it's partially because the Braves have just been mired in this 500-ish or just slightly below 500 for so long now. It feels like the season isn't really changing, but the calendar is moving. And we'll definitely talk about how it's time for the Braves need to turn it on, man. They need to get this engine started, like, right now.
Yeah, I was about to say, you talk about the date of the year, like, not really feeling like it is. We both have other responsibilities outside of keeping up with the Braves. You with Atlanta United, me with the Hawks. I'm not used to the Hawks playing at this time of year. So I think my calendar and my internal schedule is very thrown off in the fact that at this point of the year, we're used to only having, you know, Atlanta Braves and Atlanta Hawks. I mean, excuse me, Atlanta United to talk about. Yeah. And yet there's a third team in the mix, and they seem to be taking up a lot of my time here recently. But you're also right. Go ahead, though.
Well, I was going to say, we were talking about this off air for just a second, but it feels weird because, you know, like, I'm an Atlanta sports fan, too. So, like, when the Hawks are playing, I'm, like, invested. I'm watching the games. I'm reading the recaps. I'm, like, you know, like, preparing for the games that they're going to play next. So that's also kind of getting woven into my brain. Load. So it's been an interesting couple of weeks here, these last couple of weeks.
Yeah, definitely. And to the point that I think you were about to head into is that, I mean, it's time for the Braves to step up, because we aren't that far away from, you know, the Braves being one of the main things to talk about sports-wise in this city. And hadn't been a whole lot of good to talk about, as we've clearly the last few weeks. I think you and I have kind of joked off air also about going to title our podcast clips that we go to post. And it's like, I'm running out of phrases to do with roller coaster, because yeah. That's honestly, like, that's all it has been leading into this point. Obviously, the Braves coming in, playing two doubleheaders back-to-back days. I mean, it just has to be absolutely brutal. And the Braves split in true roller coaster fashion, lose one, win one, lose one, win one. I mean, what have you seen out of the last few days?
Well, here, let me put it this way. You know, it's tough. So I was doing some number crunching. I think Mark Bowman was kind of the first one to kind of point this out a couple weeks ago, but I've been tracking it a little bit this last week or so. So for the Braves to get to 90 wins, now at this point in the season, they need to go 56-35 the rest of the way. That's a .615 winning percentage. The winning percentage that they needed before yesterday's doubleheader was .612. So while it almost feels like a win yesterday to split a doubleheader against the Mets, especially when one of the games you're going up against Jacob deGrom,
yeah,
that's actually not good enough for the Braves. Like, the Braves need to start winning 3 out of 4, winning 2 out of 3 consistently, like, throughout the rest of the season. And it's hard to see it going that way right now. So I'm just kind of caught in between two minds, because when I think about these last couple games where they've played 4 games in 2 days, you kind of see it as a win for them to have split both of those series. You know, the first split got them the series win against the Cardinals, and then obviously we just mentioned yesterday's split, but also splitting series or doubleheaders, like, that's not good enough. 500 baseball is not going to be good enough for this team to get to where they want to go in the postseason. Now, maybe they don't need to get to 90 wins. Maybe, like, this is going to be one of those crazy years where there's, like, not a 90-game winner in the division, but I doubt that's going to happen. I think the Mets are going to get up there, and I think they're only going to improve. The Braves are fortunate that the Mets do have the fewest amount of wins. They have the worst winning percentage of any division leader in Major League Baseball right now, so they've got that going for them, but you can't kind of count on that to stand up for the rest of the year. So, yeah, it's just, we have to kind of start to hold the Braves to a higher standard if we expect them to be a team playing in the postseason. And if not, then we need to adjust our lens and how we look at this team.
Well, so what I think one of the things I was about to ask you, and you kind of answered it for me, is that 90-win threshold, is that to win the division or to just make the postseason? I mean, what...
I mean, right now, the Braves are closer to the division lead than they are to the wild card lead, or to a wild card spot.
Yeah, which is scary because, and I think it's something, though, that we really did discuss, though, knowing how the NL West looks this year, like, it's win the division or miss the playoffs, most likely. Mm-hmm. And it seems like that's where this team is headed. So it is kind of, by answering one, you are answering the other. This team has to win the division, which would take around 90 games, which, if you're not keeping up, the Braves are currently 34-37, which is a good old 47.9 winning percentage. Not good enough. And you're telling me the Braves need a 60-what percent?
615.
The rest of the way.
Only one team in baseball has that so far right now in the league. And that is the best team in baseball right now by record is the San Francisco Giants.
Yeah.
If you had money, that is insane. Absolutely.
Well, I was about to say, like, that's the thing with them is, like, it's one of the, where did they come from? Because, like, we knew the Dodgers, we knew the Padres, we expected those two teams to be duking it out. And it's like, oh, by the way, it's the Giants' turn, you know, that they're coming back around this year to sneak up on everybody. And like I said, that NL West is going to take up the playoffs.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Because the Giants are so good, now you've got both the Dodgers and the Padres just occupying both the wild card spots right now. So I think that the Braves, if you're the Braves, you got to look at, okay, it's going to be easier to catch the Mets than it's going to be to catch any of those three teams, you would think, unless the Giants, I mean, the Giants could definitely fall off pretty precipitously at some point, but they've already, you know, established such a big lead at this point. It would have to be a pretty drastic fall for them. So you have to think that they're going to continue to be in it at least for a little bit until something drastically changes. So it's an interesting season.
And I think I heard Chip Carey say this in the broadcast yesterday, and I do think it holds true that we're going to find out a lot about this Braves team here over the next week or what is it? 2 weeks? Just a week. Is they're in the middle of the series with the Mets where, you know, just split a couple of or split a doubleheader, excuse me. And then you see this team again. And so if you're going to build some momentum to win the division, it's going to happen now against the team who's probably going to be in your way of winning the division. And so if you're just splitting the series, or if you're, heaven forbid, losing a series, then it's over with. And I think it's one of those, I've heard a lot of people that, you know, I get sometimes in a bad habit of being Eeyore. We joke about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, being very negative. But for months now, I have called this Braves team average, and everyone, I feel like, has tried to tell me why that was incorrect. And, you know, you haven't seen everything come together yet. And it's like, okay, we're almost at the midway point, and everything hasn't come together yet. And while it's great, and I do want to talk about here in a minute, you know, Kyle Muller, you know, and what we saw in the past from Tucker Davidson, and, you know, these younger guys who were stepping up, who were having good performances, and while it's great that, you know, that Freddie's hitting the ball again, and it's great that Ozzy's, you know, hitting home runs, and you're getting some production back from places that you weren't getting earlier in the season, it's still not completely coming back together, and you're still win one, lose one, win a couple, lose, you know, like still back and forth, middle of the pack, and overall just uninspiring baseball.
Yeah, you know, I've kind of compared the way that this Braves season has gone recently to, there's a phrase like in golf when you're playing in a scramble, it's called like ham and egging it, where it's like when one person is driving the ball well, but they can't putt, you've got a partner who can make all the putts, you know, and so together you can have this, you know, great round or whatever. And the way it's been the complete opposite with the Braves this season, where it's like, one aspect of the team is like almost driving the team to losses, whether it's the offense not being able to put together a good performance when you had a good outing from a starting pitcher, or when the offense scores a bunch of runs, then you blow a save. I felt like that was illustrated perfectly in the pair of 8-10 losses that you had to the Red Sox. I mean, when you score 8 runs, you should win those games like 100% of the time. And to lose back-to-back games, to lose 2 games in which you scored 16 runs combined, that's got to be just like devastating to the morale, you know, first of all. But also it just shows that, like, I think the reason that it's so detrimental to morale is because players are like, oh man, like we score 8 runs and the bullpen blows it. But that's not, I'm not saying like it's always the bullpen's fault. Sometimes, you know, we've seen recently, actually in a couple games they've won, 1-0. Thank God Ronald Acuña Jr. has hit home runs.
Yeah.
But other than, like, if that hadn't happened, like, there was nothing. So it's just been really, really frustrating season when you look at it like that. Like, we're just, you can't kind of get all the cylinders firing and allow yourself to really get on a run and vault yourself into a different kind of stratosphere of the season.
Well, and let's also go back to that Boston series and something that if the Braves didn't need anything, it was any type of extra off the field controversy or whatever you might want to call it. But it happened after that Boston game where Brian Snicker calls out Ronald Acuña for trying to extend a double into a triple in the 9th inning, called it a stupid play, something that Acuña can't do. And, like, I mean, just really went in, and it took off in probably a less than ideal way, in that, you know, Braves fans and then a lot of other media were saying, hey, you can't say this about your team's best player. And I think also people were holding on to the fact that in Brian Snicker's statement, he called Freddie Freeman the MVP. Like, you have the MVP coming up to the plate, and, you know, people were pointing out the fact that, well, Freddie Freeman's no MVP this year, that he's last year's MVP. I'm curious, what was your thoughts when you heard what Snit had to say?
I think, you know, and I'll let you go too, the first instinct that I had, or when I started seeing the reaction, I think more than anything I was frustrated with the reaction that was happening, because
same.
I feel like a lot of people, just like, there's... I'm not trying to be like pompous, like media person here, but when you're in a press conference, there's context in that press conference. And the context here was that Ronald Acuña Jr. did make a mistake in the game. Like, he should not have gotten thrown out there. He said that he shouldn't have gotten thrown out there, you know, because he was in the press conference later on. And overall, it was a very frustrating game that followed a very frustrating game the night before. We've talked about these 2 8-10 losses. And to me, the way I saw that was the last thing that happened in the game that just made Snit mad. It was the first thing he was asked about. And so he was just emotional about it. And he said, honestly, you know, he gave you a raw quote about how he felt. And I think that, you know, when you look at this season, the Braves have made lots of those stupid mistakes. And those are the kinds of mistakes that, you know, no matter how good a player is, you know, when you make those kinds of errors, that's not going to be a team that wins titles. We saw it last year, you know, in the playoffs last year, Dansby Swanson made a terrible mistake. I don't know what Brian Snicker would have had to say. And I know that a lot of people were referencing a quote that Brian Snicker had about Dansby Swanson from a few weeks ago, saying that he was just like similar situation, and he was just like hustling, being aggressive, trying to make a play. And that's not what he said here. But I really just think this was a case of a lot of emotions boiling over. And then this kind of event and the circumstances around them allowed it to kind of just spill out of Snit naturally. I think that if he would have had a break, if he were to have talked to you the next day, he would have phrased it differently. He would have been a little bit more sober about it. But I kind of appreciate the fact that he was kind of so raw with his answer. And I don't think that there was any malice behind it. And that's the frustrating part of it to me, because a lot of people did take it that way.
Yeah. So I think just being, you know, it's one of those laying it out there as it is. A lot of people looked at old white man complaining about, you know, his black player not, you know, doing the right thing. And like, there were a lot of those things that got pushed into the scenario. Look, honestly, how I looked at it was Brian Snicker calling out his team's best player for doing something that your team's best player should not do. Why did he not have the same thing to say about Dansby a couple weeks ago? I think it was context, different scenario in the game, and where Ronald Acuna essentially ended his team's chances of a comeback in that specific game. And you're right, Snit was hot because he's, you know, people want to critique his managerial decisions about the bullpen. And I think Snit looks at the bullpen much like I have, at least this year, where it's like, I have so many guys on the team, guys that got to play. Mm-hmm. And if guys can't play, then it doesn't matter who I throw. You know, I'm not going to throw Will Smith out there four nights in a row because he's the only good, you know, bullpen pitcher I've got. Like, I got to have other guys step up. And if I don't, we're not going to win. And this whole thing doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you add poor bullpen performance, which I think that night was AJ Minter and somebody else. I can't remember now. It's a week ago. but then you throw on the fact that Acuna ends the chances for the team to have a comeback. And yeah, I get him being frustrated. And I get him putting such high expectations on his team's best player, which it doesn't matter that Freddie Freeman won the MVP last year. Ronald Acuna is the best player on this team. And it's one of those things that it has to be so frustrating for Snit to live with, because he knows that same style of play out of Acuna is what helps win this team games.
Mm-hmm.
Like that aggressive, that, you know, almost childish, like, I believe I can make any play anytime, is such an incredible quality that Ronald Acuna has. And it's even something that, smack the microphone, it's even something that got referenced last night. I don't know if you have the audio pulled up, Joe, but with the Braves winning 1-0 in a highly, you know, a super close game in that doubleheader against the Mets, Snit talked about the fact that Acuna playing like a kid is what makes him such a great player.
Like I say, he's like he's in the backyard every night. You know, it's no stress, nothing. I mean, he's just in the backyard playing ball. You know, he likes playing ball. And I would too. If I had his skill set, I'd love to be out there every day.
See, so you're getting Snit, who, now this is what we hear more often than not from
right.
Snit talking about Ronald Acuna.
Right.
Is the fact that, you know, that he's out there, he's playing like he's in the backyard. Like, it's just, it's effortless, it's fun. It's truly a game for Acuna. And when sometimes, probably, that needs to be put in check a little bit, and there needs to be a little bit of a reminder that, hey, it is a game. It is fun. However, you're getting paid a lot of money. We're all getting paid a lot of money to play this game to win. And, you know, and if you're preventing the team from winning, then we gotta, you know, we gotta get things in check a little bit. Sorry for the long rant.
This is good. You know, the reaction that I was looking at seeing on Twitter after this happened, it seems to me like people are not necessarily critical of the point that it was a mistake. Like they actually agree that, because it was so clearly a mistake. You know, you have the tying run coming up to the plate in Freddie Freeman. You have to be on base for that. But the criticism is that you just should never criticize a player with the Hall of Fame potential quality that Ronald Acuna Jr. has. And I just totally disagree with that. You know, I think that honestly, sometimes those kinds of players are the players that can take some of that more harsher critique, especially early in their careers when they are still, you know, smoothing out some of the nuances in their game, some of the game situational awareness, that kind of thing. You know, I think that that's clearly going to be something that Ronald Acuna Jr. learns from. I don't think he'll make that mistake again. I think that, you know, again, there's been criticisms of Ronald Acuna Jr. for some of these kinds of things. There was one in the postseason, that actually happened before the postseason in 2019, and then again in the postseason where he wasn't running out of the box and stuff, and then was like, I forget what happened in those situations, but it wasn't good for the team. And
it was running hard to first, I think, was the issue.
Yeah. Yeah. And these are all, you know, these are different situations, right? But I think that just in general, all of these situations point to a player that has, you know, as much talent as we've ever seen in baseball. Like, he literally could be one of the all-time greats, like among the best of the best by the time he retires. But he's still a young kid, and he's still, you know, just needs to go through some of these things. And I think sometimes, you know, these adjustments are the right adjustments. Like I'm talking about, like, a kind of a stiff correction from the manager can be actually a positive thing in the long run. It feels to me like people are just worried that Ronald Acuña Jr. is not going to be able to withstand this kind of criticism from his manager, that he's got, like, such thin skin that he's going to start, you know, making a fuss or become unhappy, maybe want to leave the team or something like that. I think that that's kind of the ultimate fear of Braves fans and why they don't like to see this kind of thing happen. But I don't see that at all. Brian Snicker praises him all the time. 99% of the time, he's talking about how he's a generational talent and he's the Braves, you know, one of the Braves' best players. And, you know, whenever that's said, there's nothing really talked about because that's what you expect.
Because we all know that. We all go to expect that. It's also a big part of this is this doesn't get said and the blowback doesn't happen if the Braves are winning. I mean, this, you know, this,
yeah,
this
totally.
It totally gets brushed over. Like, part of the frustration of losing is being very critical on moments like this where you're like, man, we really needed to get this game. And now we had this happen. And it's like, you know, and I get the idea of, like, come on, like, we need to catch a break somewhere. And there's also another side of this, which is the people who are critiquing what Snit had to say are also seeing Atlanta sports get a bit of a facelift or a change in that Hawks have a new head coach and they're winning right now. The Falcons have a new head coach, and the idea is that they're going to go back to winning. And so it's almost like, oh, we need to get Snit up out of here because the Braves aren't winning, and that's all this team needs is a change in manager, and everything's going to get so much better. And it's always one of the biggest things that me and John Chuckery go back and forth with time and time again, is that, you know, you're not just going to make this change and everything's going to get so much better, but these things happen when there is frustration about what's going on in the season and not winning. And then, go ahead. It looked like you were going to say something.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, in that game where you criticized Ronald Acuña Jr., nobody made a fuss when he also, I don't know if it was AJ Minter or Shane Green in that game, but they both were bad out of the bullpen. And he said, I forget exactly which one it was, but he was like, they didn't execute pitches. Like, we got to execute pitches there in those situations. Nobody made a fuss about that, even though he's criticizing someone's direct play of the game.
Yeah, I was about to say, so I was in that press conference, and the first question he got asked, he said, you know, we didn't execute pitches. You know, bullpen was bad. You know, Acuña with that play. You know, he listed some things out. It was like four things he listed out. And then the follow-up question was, you know, specifically asking about the tag out that happened with Acuña. And so then he gave the quote that went. So it was like, also, context there. If you heard the whole thing, like you're saying, then it would make a little bit more sense. And that's also having to understand how those press conferences goes with that group of guys who ask Nick questions, who most often will ask him about the same thing two or three times. Because if you know Snit, you know, a lot of times he'll give you it was a good game. And then you ask him again, and he'll give you a little bit more. You ask him again, he'll give you a little bit more. And that one just happened to be the one that gets clipped and gets shared and gets Braves fans really angry about.
And I would say, that, again, I kind of mentioned this earlier, but I think if you ask him the next day when he's not so riled up, I don't think he phrases it exactly, you know, saying stupid. I don't know if he would actually say that. Maybe he would. I don't know. But I think he was just hot in that moment, and he gave you the raw varnished truth of what was on his mind. And I feel like a lot of Braves fans, when they probably saw Ronald Acuña Jr. get thrown out there as well, they were also probably thinking, that was stupid. Why did you do that? You have Freddie Freeman coming up. So, you know, I feel like people want to almost, I almost feel like people want to make a lot of it because they would prefer Snit to not be the manager in general. So, like, this is an opportunity I don't know. Maybe that's a cynical look from me, but
well, it also still fulfills it. You know, my I don't know if it's a hot take, my sneaking suspicion, whatever it is. I still stand on it, Joe, that I think Snit retires at the end of the season. I still think this is the type of season where that happens, where it's just like, this has been fun, but man, is this a lot of work. You know, it's one of those Samuel L. Jackson, you know, I'm getting too old for this.
Yeah.
Or no, not Samuel L. Jackson. Wow. Danny Glover. Of, you know, I'm getting too old for this. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's where he's at. And so it's one of those, be careful what you ask for.
Yeah.
You know, fans and other media, because it doesn't always get better. You never know. You know, it's one of those, you don't know what you have until it's gone.
Braves are fortunate they have Ron Washington kind of in the wings, yeah, if that something like that were to happen, but you're absolutely right. Like, you don't know which way something's going to go when a big move like that happens.
If your day sounds like,
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
And I was about to say, and to kind of continue this same idea, is Charlie Morton, after, I was there Thursday,
yeah,
for the Cardinals game, where Charlie Morton, incredible performance, gets to go out into the eighth inning. Charlie Morton, 37 years old, is pitching in the eighth inning of a game. And he said in the post game, I'm so thankful to play for a manager like Snit, who, when he came out there to talk to me about, it was in the dugout, can you go out into the eighth? He was like, he looked me in the eyes and he was listening to me. He didn't make his decision up in his head, talk to me, only to tell me, no, you're done. Like, he listened to me, and I went back out there, and he was like, he essentially said something to the effect of, like, you don't see that anymore.
Yeah.
And I also respect him so much for it. And that comes from Snit, yeah, being an older manager, being a player's manager, and a guy who, as much as analytics are such a big thing, is still one of those guys who is like, let me look you in your eyes,
mm-hmm,
and you tell me if you can do it. And he went out there, and it, you know, didn't necessarily go his way, but it was still an incredible performance from Morton.
Well, it's a great anecdote because it really does point out what really truly is like a quote unquote player's manager. It's not just like a manager that I feel like lots of times you think a certain manager is a player's manager because he goes into a press conference and he's like, oh shucks, you know, and he never criticizes a player and that kind of thing. But really, that moment that you just described and that Charlie Morton described, that's really the moment that determines whether a manager kind of is more on the side of, you know, listening to a player and taking his whole self into account, or if he's kind of more driven by numbers and other strategic factors. So that's a good anecdote. And he also had some great stuff to say about the whole foreign substance issue. I know we talked about it a little bit last week, but I certainly did not expect Charlie Morton to go out there and have probably his most dominant performance of the season in these conditions where players are getting rid of all this stuff, considering he spins the ball more than probably any other pitcher in baseball.
Yeah, that was so I posted his post-game little excerpt from Morton talking about foreign substances on Twitter, because I mean my jaw dropped when he started getting into it and leading into the fact that we're having the wrong conversation. And I was like, yes we are having the wrong conversation. You know, it's one of those, no, why is no one asking why guys need this stuff to
right.
be able to pitch, you know, to be able to have grip? And it was like, thank you. Like, you know, someone with some sense here. And I loved it because I posted that quote and I had somebody in my mentions being like, you know, these players continue to cheat and the media just, you know, just sucks it up and excuses it for them. And I was like, yeah, okay, of course. Gotta love that guy.
If they were using substance to take spin off the ball, like if they were using like a Vaseline or something that made the ball knuckle, that would be a different story. But just hoping them grip the baseball is not that. There are people who are kind of wanting to talk about the foreign substance in the same way we had, you know, the conversation around steroids happened in terms of, you know, aiding a player and being able to improve their performance. But to me, these are different things.
Yeah.
And we've heard, you know, it's really telling when you hear guys like Pete Alonso and other hitters who talk about the fact that they don't even mind it that much. Yeah, I know we kind of had a lot of this discussion already, not to rehash it all, but that was great stuff from Morton there.
And it was also interesting too, because under the new rules that were implemented yesterday, the Braves are technically a part of history, because Jacob deGrom, who pitched against the Braves yesterday, was the first Major League Baseball player to be checked for foreign substances. That was something that happened where, and you saw, it was right before he went to pitch in the first inning, you saw an umpire walk over, and he didn't even square up his shoulders to DeGrom. He looked at him from the side. He did one of those, hey bud, I gotta check you. And so, and it was funny because the Mets crowd starts booing.
Yeah, of course.
And DeGrom asks, like, okay, what do you need to see? And so hands him the ball, takes off his cap, and then they pointed to, because they have to manage, the umpires have to check belts.
Oh.
And so DeGrom was like, you want me to take my pants off right here? Yeah, so he literally pulls the belt out of the loop and has to show him the inside of the belt. Now, I saw when they stuck a camera on, mind is blanking, who pitched yesterday?
Mueller?
Before Mueller. Or, after.
Ian Anderson.
Ian Anderson. Yeah, there we go. Sorry. I was like, had a brain. Ian Anderson, like, folded out his belt. So it's all just like guys getting used to this new thing, and they asked Ian about it after the game, and he was very much, you know, along the, like, these are the new rules, this is what happens, you know, yada yada, like, it is what it is, it's fine. It's just, you could tell that, like, guys are slightly uncomfortable
with that, like, awkwardness.
It's just, it's just weird. Where, because, and then DeGrom said, and Anderson the same, that I think it was the fourth inning that umpires checked him again, and then checked all relievers. And so, you know, as they're kind of awkwardly implementing this, which, like you said, I don't want to rehash stuff, but I still think it's the wrong approach. I think there's a much better way to handle it, and I think the one thing that players keep emphasizing that we aren't putting enough attention on is you are changing this in the middle of the season. Like, it's just, who does this? You know, it's Major League Baseball does, because they don't do it anything well. But it's just, it's such an awkward thing that we're literally watching unfold in front of us, because guys are like, oh, all right, guess this is the new thing to get used to. But I did find it, after what I said last week about, we might need to keep an eye on Charlie Morton because he's had his highest spin rate this year, and then he went out and had that performance, and I was like, lips are sealed.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, we closed out the podcast very briefly because there was so much to talk about last week. We're like, Tucker Davidson has been great. We'll talk about him next week. And then, of course, that night.
Well, we can.
yeah. That night leaves with the forearm strain, which honestly it felt at the time, and like until they put out an official statement, it seemed like it was going to be worse, honestly, than what it turned out to be, which was just some tightness and irritation. But I do wonder if that has anything to do with trying to grip the ball better. And I continue to wonder if we're going to see, because we've already seen who was the other pit, Glasnow had the big
Glasnow
comment about partially tearing his UCL.
Well, and he made so much sense with it, because he was like, you're now having to grip it harder.
Right, yeah.
And so that torque that's coming from when you pitch the ball.
More of those tendons right there.
Yeah.
In the forearm.
Glasnow was one who said, like, after his first few pitches of throwing the ball, he was like, I was waking up muscles that I knew shouldn't be working as hard as they are because I'm having to put so much pressure on the ball to make sure it doesn't slip out, which then goes back to Pete Alonso's point of, all right, are we going to start seeing guys get hit more?
And it sounded like to me his thing was like, if you just introduce this rule in an off season going into a new season, then you can slowly progress. And, you know, he talks about waking up those muscles. You can actually develop that over a pitching regimen while you get ramped up. But to have to suddenly change and still be as effective as you normally are, I mean, that's where issues are going to come from. And I do wonder if we will start to see, you know, we're still in the very beginnings of this. If, you know, guys make 3, 4, 5 starts without the substance, if we do start to see more guys leaving games with forearm tightness and potentially even worse injuries. And if that does come to fruition, I think Major League Baseball will have no choice but to say, okay, you can go back to it and we'll revisit this. We'll put it into effect next year, because that's something you just can't have happen if players are starting to get injured because they aren't able to grip the baseball like they normally should.
We'll see. But here's the problem, Joe. Major League Baseball, I said it last week, Major League Baseball, not mature enough to handle this in a responsible way and, you know, come up with some sort of solution instead of creating a new problem from a problem, you know, is when two wrongs don't make a right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see Major League Baseball coming out this strong and the support that they've gotten. Because, like, look, I love a lot of, you know, a lot of Major League Baseball writers, and especially the national ones. You know, some great guys, but the way that they've sucked up to this decision being made by Major League Baseball, Major League Baseball being firm, cracking down on a problem that was, you know, that was because it was too big. And so finally Major League Baseball is doing something about it. And I'm thinking, to your point about, you know, changing this midway in the season, guys potentially getting hurt, are we creating two separate seasons then by doing this? Yeah. Like, are we headed in a way where we think the Braves are out of it, you know, at this point, but, you know, with guys getting hurt? Or is this something that then affects the Braves where, you know, now the Braves, we saw, you know, Tucker Davidson, and having a forearm strain sounds very similar to a guy gripping the ball too hard.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something that then affects them and, you know, kind of spirals and causes more problems?
Yeah, and that's what I was saying last week. It's like when you throw in some sort of major event that causes volatility in the season, it's probably a good thing for the Braves, considering they're still sputtering and have not yet gotten going, and maybe that volatility can actually break in their favor and help them going forward from this point in season. Of course, it could go the other way, but if it goes the other way, it's kind of just exacerbating the already kind of poor season they're already having. So I think it could be a definite game changer in terms of the trajectory that not just the Braves, but all teams have going forward from this point in the season. So it will be interesting to track.
Joe, where do we go from here? I mean, obviously finishing out the Mets series this week, going to Cincinnati and playing a team that, I mean, you just go by record. You go, are where they at in their division? You're like, oh, they're fourth in their division. Like, this isn't going anywhere. But, like, they have one more win than the Braves.
They have a better record than the Braves, technically. Yeah.
So, like, and then you're right back at the Mets, and that following up with the Marlins. Like, okay, now you're hard hit division. I think
that this is the most pivotal, probably 2 week stretch of the season that the Braves will have. Because I think, because when you look at the opponents, you play what, 7 games against the Mets, with the Reds in between. That the way, however you come out of that, whether you win a bunch of them or lose a bunch of them or maybe even split, like whatever happens, you're going to have so much more information as to where you need to go, how much you're going to need to have improved by the end of the season, that I think it will be very instructive on what the Braves have to do, especially around this kind of, I keep on calling it the trade deadline, but this trade or the trade window, but like the trade deadline, time, this hot stove season, in terms of what kind of moves they want to make. Will adding a bullpen arm or two be enough? Do they need to go out there and get make a splash for an outfielder? I tend to think that they do need to add an outfielder, whether they do it in this trade period or in the off season remains to be seen. But I think that, yeah, this is going to be such an important 2 weeks. And then you've got a bunch of games against the Marlins too, which I know we can, you can easily look past the Marlins, but the Braves just lost,
Not this year.
Yeah, I know, exactly. And if you lose those games to the Marlins, then that's setting you back even more as well. So it's going to be really interesting. But also, those are games where you can take advantage, and maybe it puts you in an even better position when you come out of them. You just don't know yet. And so it's just going to be fascinating to see how they do come out of it. But I also think that what we're seeing already this season is you're seeing the Braves get good evaluations on lots of players. We've seen Bryce Wilson make lots of starts, more than he's ever pitched in the major leagues. Tucker Davidson's come up and proven some things. They're looking at Kyle Muller right now. We're seeing William Contreras and what he can do. So positives and negatives on both sides, but I do think that if the Braves aren't going to make the postseason this year, they need to get a good look at some of these young players that they have. I think especially if they don't trade him and they're out of it, in the second half, I think we'll start to see a lot more Kyle Wright, because he's a guy that the Braves need to know exactly what he's going to be able to provide. And so you hate to see it, because a lot of this has happened out of bad circumstances. Like, you don't want to have to be evaluating William Contreras at this point of the season, because you want Travis d'Arnaud being in there, but at least that's kind of the fallback opportunity that you have if you're the Braves.
Yeah, well, and for those who are on the Braves just need to make a couple of trades and then can turn this thing around. Alex Anthopoulos was on the broadcast yesterday on Bally and talked about the fact of, another thing to add a wrench to all of this stuff with foreign substances is Major League Baseball changing this rule has made every general manager go, all right, we'll give this thing a couple of weeks and then take our evaluation of players and pitchers and reevaluate that, because we got to be like, okay, is the guy that we thought we were interested in, are we still interested in him now if he doesn't have stuff? That adds something else, another added layer that we probably will end up with not too many trades happening until much closer to the deadline, because people are gonna draw out those evaluations, and it's like, just add it to the list of things that Major League Baseball complicated by throwing it in.
And again, I'll reiterate, it's a problem for the Braves, because you gotta be the second best team in baseball, essentially, from here on, from today when they play the Mets tonight, to the rest of the season. And obviously these games count a huge amount. You've got huge important games coming up in these next couple of weeks. So it's a tough one, man. It's such a tough one, whether you like stick or twist if you're the Braves in this situation. I think I referred to it last week as like, do you piss in the wind? It's like if you have gale force winds coming against you, do you still try to fight that? It's tough. And I'm not saying that you tank or anything, but I don't see this team selling off any pieces at the deadline. But it's just a tough situation. Yeah. Definitely one they probably would not have expected themselves to find coming into the season.
I agree. Well, when we are back next week, we will, like Joe said, we'll be able to really see where this team is at and get some more accurate evaluations of this Braves team. We thank you all for watching Batter Up on Facebook Live. Please go download the podcast, whether it's on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts. For Joe Patrick, I'm Caleb Johnson. Have a great day.